Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 28th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me from Japan Baseball Weekly Studio Annex via cyberspace is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Well, I guess we've been paying the rent because I'm still here.
Paying the rent.
Luxurious surroundings.
Wait a second. You guess you're paying the rent?
Well, yeah. Well, I haven't.
As long as there's no notice on the door.
Well, you know, Japan has very strong tenancy rules. Once you're in, it's hard to get rid of you. So I guess we're paying the rent, but we're not certain.
All right. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers, and we're going to discuss the Tigers, closers, and respond to a comment and much more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
John,
what?
It's your turn this week.
Yes, but it's a really good topic because remember we talked about Yuki Matsui of the Eagles last week, who was shipped to the farm as we kind of expected he would be in favor of Yudai Mori, a guy I was aware about, but I had forgotten about him, and I saw this interview with him in the offseason. Anyway, put that aside.
Okay.
Matsui had a really bad game. It was Wednesday and the Eagles lost, and he walked five guys in the first inning, and that got me thinking, who had the most walks in Japan before that game?
Oh, in a game?
Not in a game. Who led NPB in walks before that game? Because it wasn't Yuki Matsui.
Well, that's interesting.
I thought you would know this. I thought that's the first thing you'd do is look it up.
Well,
I don't know you like I thought
I
know.
Cheating.
You didn't know this was going to be on the test.
Well, I don't really think about it as a test.
Oh, okay.
A test of our endurance, I guess, and our patience with each other, but
I can change the question if you like. Is it something that you might like?
I'm intrigued
because it also got me thinking about something else, which was because he had eight walks in this game, Matsui did. I thought,
right.
who has the most walks in a game?
Well, that ain't the record.
No, it's not even close.
Well, I can tell you because I went to a game where. My first game at Cebu Dome, I guess my Twitter followers know this story. I went to a game at Cebu Dome in 1988, was one of the final games of the Nankai Hawks in the final waning days of the season. And I saw Kimiyasu Kudo throw a shutout of the Nankai Hawks in which he walked 10 and hit a batter.
Interesting.
Well, I talked to him about that and he says, that sounds like a game of mine.
Well, which question do you want to answer?
Well, gee, the one who was leading the league in walks. I have to think of somebody who walks a lot, and I know a couple of people that won't be.
Well, that's not the question.
I know, which would be Daichi Osero or Alan Curry.
The clock's winding down. The clock is off.
Okay, I'm off the clock. Who is it?
Yusei Kikuchi of the Lions had 16 walks, and Yuki Matsui had 15 walks before that game.
Wow.
Yeah, shocking.
Wow.
Shocking. Now, the guy who had the most walks in a game in NPB was Hideo Nomo. He had 16 in a game in 1994. And I read, I can't verify this, I wasn't able to check, but I did read that he actually pitched a complete game and won it.
Well, like I said, if you're Kimiyasu Kudo, or you might have been a shutout.
Yeah.
Well, of course, in that Kudo game, I think he struck out 12 or 13 guys. So, yeah.
Yeah.
With Nomo, that was very possible. Nomo almost should have been the obvious one because he used to set records for innings pitched and walks.
Well, anyway, I thought you'd get that because I know you go through the data and you check out things, and I thought you might have seen that.
Well, I do. If you asked me before, it would take me 30 seconds to look it up. Mm. But that's not the point.
Oh. Yeah. All right.
I'm trying to sound, like I can spin this stuff off the top of my head, but that's why I use a computer because off the top of my head is kind of sparse up here.
Computers, they're smarter than we are. All right.
Well,
so,
no,
so I went out to Yokohama Stadium on Saturday, and I talked to Matt Merton of the Tigers, and he's a favorite of JBW, and I suspect we'll be talking to him again this season, probably later in the season, before the playoffs start.
Oh, I talked to him today.
Well, I mean, for the show.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, obviously, you know, after coming here and setting the NPB record for hits in a single season in 2010, I think he's experienced a lot of learning and not just with baseball.
Man, yeah, he could be the poster child for cross-cultural communication school or something.
Or skills or how to develop them, yeah. But he's strong in his faith and he's strong on the field, and we talked before the Tigers beat DeNA and what's new. That day he equaled the club record for RBIs in a month with 29. Now he tied Willie Kirkland and Randy Bass. They each had 29 RBIs in the month of April.
Toothpick Willie. Wow.
Yeah. And I thought he was going to pass the record on Sunday, but he didn't. So I guess he'll have Tuesday and Wednesday to try to do that against the first place Carp. So anyway, it was really good sitting down with Matt. As you'll hear, we hit on a bunch of topics, got a lot into this power-packed interview. So let's take a listen to it. All right, joining us again for the sixth time, I think it is Matt Merton. We love having you on the show. You're an official friend of the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, just a few things we want to talk about. You got off to a fantastic start personally. What changed for you in the offseason? Because I know there was some uncertainty before you left Japan that you were going to come back to the Tigers.
Yeah, obviously I think for each and every player, when you come to the end of a contract, you're never certain as to what may happen. We understand this game's a business. You know, as an individual with your family and your friends, you have to do what you feel is best for yourself and what you're most comfortable with, and the club has to do the same thing. So, you know, we went through that process. We were able to come to terms with the club to come back for another year, and we were excited about that. And so as soon as we got the answer on the fact that we were coming back, it was all in preparation to be back here in Japan. We made a move this offseason. We moved to Nashville. I hooked up with some new guys there. And
Elvis is in the building.
Yeah. Hooked up with some new guys there and did some training, which was really productive, and you know, felt good about coming into this season.
So how did your attitude and your approach to your offseason change with the uncertainty?
To be honest with you, it doesn't, because I know, like, as a ball player, like, we can't sit around and wait for an answer before we start preparing. So for me, you know, my preparation started regardless of what was going on with the contract. I knew that one way or the other, it was either going to work out that I came back here or God willing, I'd be playing somewhere else. So as a player, I think you go about your business as usual.
And you said you made some changes. What kind of training changes?
Well, see, I had been in Atlanta, in training in Atlanta. When I went to Nashville, I had to find a new group of guys, and I was really fortunate to hook up with a guy named Josh Costello, who runs works out of a facility there in Nashville called Chadwick's. There's a few major league ball players that work out in there, as well as minor league ball players. So we had a hitting facility that we had, and really focused on my lower half, especially my hammy, which has given me some trouble over the last so many years, and then obviously core stability. So there's a lot of things I felt that was very beneficial this winter, and I felt, like I said, my body felt good. I felt good about coming into this year.
All right, so you're off to probably your best start in Japan. I mean, 2010 was pretty good, but is this your best start?
Yeah, it is. I mean, obviously, numbers-wise, this has got to be my best start.
And so how do you view the start, and what's your approach when you're really hot like that at the start?
I think at the beginning, you just want to enjoy it. I mean, you know that this game's not that easy. I've actually, you know, had a week last week where I did not perform as well already. You just realize that, you know, in this game, you just take it one day at a time. Like I said, I felt good about the start to the year. I felt good about my approach, and my swing felt pretty good. My body felt good. It all kind of came together, and I was able to get pitches to hit and get some results. So you add all that together, it was a good start for me. Our club started rolling a little bit, and you just enjoy it while you can, because there's so many ups and downs in this game. You just try to take it one day at a time.
Right. Now, I know you guys have already overcome a couple of injuries. I know Fukudome doesn't look like he's 100%, and Nishioka is out because of that collision they had in the outfield. Looking at your team, how do you evaluate the team before the season, and now that the season has started, how do you evaluate
it? To be honest with you, coming into the season, you know, there were some question marks for myself. I mean, I think that we had, obviously, the ability. We all knew we had the ability. It was just going to kind of be a matter of how things came together. And for us, so far, we've been very fortunate. We've had some guys who have really stepped up and played well. Gomez has been a huge, you know, addition to our club. The way that he's been able to come in and perform, it just adds more depth. Gives the pitchers one more guy to think about. Obviously, losing Nishioka there early in the season, that first series, was, you know, disheartening. I know as an individual, it shook me up a little bit just to see him out there on the field like that. And you first worry about the person. You know, the sport itself is kind of irrelevant at that point. But, you know, just praying that he was going to be okay. And we were able to get some good news on that, you know, relatively quickly. So we knew he was going to be in some pain, and but we knew that in terms of his future lifestyle, he was going to be all right, which was important. So, you know, it's hard to replace a guy like that, but we've really had some guys step up and play really well, and I think that's only a benefit for us as we move forward.
So does your evaluation of the team kind of change as you go along?
Yeah, it does. I mean, obviously, we've performed offensively, I think, a lot better than we would have expected, better than we could have hoped for. It's not that we don't have good players, but you know the way we've played thus far, we've consistently had guys day in and day out coming up to the plate and getting the job done, and that's all you can hope for. I mean, I think that as you look at our team moving forward, I don't think that you can expect the same offensive output throughout the entire year. It's just not realistic. What I do think is going to happen though is I think that our pitching has been doing a better and better job, and I think that they'll settle in, and as they settle in, I think we're going to balance out a little bit, and I think that we should stay competitive based on what we've seen so far.
All right, yeah, I believe that. Now, you've played 6 games against the Yakult Swallows, and I think the run total combined is 86. What's it like playing in games, especially when you had a career day one day, 7 RBIs, 2 home runs? It was like a softball game.
Yeah, we were joking in the dugout. We said whoever kicks or whoever gets the 2-point conversion is going to win. We're throwing up. I mean, it was 12 to 11 or 14. It was pretty incredible. But
I was in the office, but I was warming up. I figured I could come up and give up a couple home runs.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. And I think you're playing in Chengdu, especially during that first series. That's not an easy place for a pitcher to throw, and it's hard out in front of home plate. Balls are getting beat off the ground and over the infielders' heads, and the wind was blowing out most of that series. The ballpark's not very big. I think you had all the makings for some high run, high scoring games, and it makes it tougher on the pitchers too. I really believe when you play in those environments, the pitchers get a little tighter. They try to be perfect. They leave more balls over the plate. So you couple all that together with 2 offenses that were swinging well, and there's a lot of runs scored. As a player, I think the hardest thing is you go out and you put up 3-4 runs. You come back out, they put up 3 or 4 runs. You know, it's just never ending. So as a player, you just know that no matter what the score is, you have to keep putting runs on the board, because at any point in time, anybody could break out and put a 5 spot up there.
A 5 spot.
Like it's nothing. You know what I mean?
We saw it. So it was April 5th, you had this career day, and you hit a home run to right field in that game, the second home run you hit. And I started looking at things funny, but Jim said the wind was blowing out. But then we find out that it was actually the ball is a little bit different. How do you view the ball situation as a player?
Obviously, since going back to 2010, which was my first year here, and how the offensive output was in that season, and then you look at it, and they went to the uniform ball in 2011. I think ever since then, you've seen a fluctuation, and they're trying to figure out how to get this ball exactly where they want it. I think at first you saw that the offense was significantly hindered by it. I think that it was very pitcher friendly. I think that last year, I think we kind of found a happy medium. If you look at the numbers, I think there was only 5 players that hit 300, and only a handful, 2 or 3 guys that maybe hit 30 or more home runs. Now, Ballantyne was the exception, but I think last year there was some good balance to the league, and I think coming into this season, we found out that the way they were storing the balls were manufactured the same way, but the way they were storing it was drying them up a little bit. And we know, you go back to the United States and in Colorado, they use the humidor as their means by which to keep the ball from traveling as much. So here in Japan, there's a lot of humidity. I think the weather plays a part in that. So here early in the season, there's less humidity. As we get going into the summer, it's going to be more humid. They're going to store the balls in a different way, not to allow them to dry out so much. The balls probably will not respond as well. But early on, you could definitely tell that there was a little bit more carry to the ball than there had been in the past.
Okay, well, what's your advice to MPB? Because this doesn't make the league or either league look good.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think that the biggest thing is that you would hope and believe that what they're trying to do is in the best interest of the league. They're trying to find that happy medium to get the ball to where they feel it's, where they want it for the MPB. I think they're in that process. It's never easy when you make a change like that to get it right immediately. It takes time. And I think that the biggest thing is what most anybody wants to see when they come to the ballpark is they want to see balance. You know, there's going to be days where you have the ace on the mound, and it's going to be a 1-0, 2-1 ball. ball game. But when they come to the ballpark and every day it's 1-0 or 2-1, you know, that's not necessarily what they want to see either. You know, so there's got to be a balance. I think that the other thing you have to look at, not only the ball, but in my opinion, you've seen a lot of injuries across the league with some of the starting pitching. Mm-hmm. So I think the depth of the pitching is a little bit different than it has been in the years past. When you got teams like Chingu, who has Ogawa's now out, and you got Tatayama, who's out, and you got Yoshinori, who's been out for the last few years. And you start looking at some of these clubs, they're really depleted when it comes to their staff because of all the major injuries. So you add the fact that some of the pitching has been depleted with some of the injuries, and then the ball is traveling a little bit more pitches are over the middle of the plate, I think you're bound to see some more runs. So for the NPB, it's just a matter of finding balance, you know.
All right, now you guys are getting good balance on the offense in part because of Gomez and what he's been doing. How do you view him? I mean, he came in a little bit late, but he's still getting on base every day. So, I mean, how do you view his start?
Well, outstanding. I mean, you can't ask for anything more when a guy comes in but to go out there and give himself a chance to help the team every day, and that's what he's done. I mean, whether it be taking a walk, setting up a situation for the guy behind him to drive in runs, or himself coming up with a big hit, he's done a really good job. And I think that, like I've said before, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that obviously he's done a great job, but hitting in a good lineup helps every individual hitter because it just makes your lineup that much deeper. The pitcher's got that many more people to worry about. They can't pitch around you quite as much. So I think that, you know, it's a byproduct of many things. He's done a good job. He's made some, you know, he's a good hitter. He's made some great adjustments already in how he's approaching the at bat. And you couple that with an offense that's really swinging well right now, I think it's advantageous for a guy to go out and perform the way he has.
All right, a lot of us picked the Giants to win the Central League, and we picked the Carp, and then we said a lot of the teams are the same. So how do you view those teams as you go forward?
I still think the Giants are the team to beat. They've won it the last two seasons, if I'm correct. They've been in the final there the last 2 years. They came up a little short last year, but they're still the team to beat. I mean, you know, just because it's early in the season, you know, you see these things. The Carp, we know, have been a very competitive team over the last few years. And last year, they really played well down the stretch, and obviously they beat us in the first round, so we know that they're going to be a tough club. And then, like I said, for ourselves, you know, there was a little uncertainty as we knew we had some players, but how's it all going to unfold? And so far, I think it's unfolded, you know, obviously really well for us, and I expect, based on what we've seen, to be competitive. And then you've got a couple of the other teams. Like I said, the Swallows have been just crushed with injuries. And then you know, the Bay Stars have had, you know, Tony's been hurt, and they've had a few injuries themselves, and they're trying to get themselves going. And then the Dragons, I think, you know, with Yoshimi being out and stuff, it's just, you know, some of these teams, it's not easy with some of the injuries they've had to key players. So I think for us, that's going to be one of the biggest things is, can we keep ourselves healthy? The guys continue to produce the way they have, and we should be right there in the mix with the rest of those clubs.
All right, I agree. We'll be expect to see you guys in the playoffs at the end of the year.
Right,
all right, thanks
Sounds
a lot
good.
For your time. I'll always
Thank
enjoy
you.
It.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, thanks a bunch, Matt. As always, we really appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time. He was really, really gracious with his time. He sat down after we chatted, and after I turned the tape recorder off, he was asking me about my running, and I told him about my injuries and all these things. Of course, he didn't think I was as old as I am going to be at the end of the year, but yeah, Matt, I'm an old man, so I run like an old man too. So anyway, what were your thoughts? What were your thoughts? We hit on so many topics. What did
my first thought was, wow, what a power-packed interview that was.
I'm gonna give you a power pack, buddy.
And thanks, Matt. I did enjoy the interview, and you know, it's interesting that I guess on a couple of levels, I guess on a kind of a macro global level, I really enjoyed it. It sounded like Matt Mertin is somebody who really aspires to find balance.
Mm.
Because, you know, it was one measured, thoughtful response after another. You know, he's not trying to swing for the fences. He's just trying to make contact,
hit the ball where it's pitched.
Yeah, pretty much. Take it where it's pitched and move on. And I thought when I saw him today, I said, you know, I was listening to what, you know, I had heard this before, obviously, to the listeners. This isn't the first I've heard it. And I heard it before I talked to Matt today. And I said, you know, you sound mature, and he always has a mature approach, but he also has a temper, and the last couple of years, he's had a couple of days where he really went off.
Yeah,
he went off like a TNT.
Yeah.
So But I get the feeling, you know, every year he's getting a little better at conquering that, or at least, you know, keeping it in stride, you know, keeping things in balance. And that's what I thought about his comments. And particularly interesting to me was the comments about not so much the Tigers. I mean, it's hard to put the league in perspective when you're focusing on what you need to do within the context of the team and the context of your game and the context of the pitches you're seeing and health and the whole season. And it's almost a tricky question to ask players to evaluate the league sometimes.
Right.
But, you know, he does it with grace. But I thought the interesting point here is his discussion about the ball and balance in the game. It's not anybody's fault. It is what it is. And it's almost like he's reaching out to NPB and saying, look, we're all trying to get this right. You know, I understand. I hear what you're going through.
So, yeah. He was very understanding. I think he put it into perspective, like not like someone who maybe has been thrown out of a game for yelling at an umpire or somebody who's been involved with some home plate collisions or something. He was very, just like you said, I mean, he was very measured and very understanding and very, a little bit PC, but he was still trying to understand what's going on. He said, look, it's a process and it's hard to get it right immediately. And I think that's very understanding because he did say that the ball hindered hitters. It was very pitcher friendly the first 2 years. And that, yeah, last year, obviously, they found a medium that was satisfactory to at least him.
Well, I think I was tweeting with this with Tony Barnett of the Swallows, and basically I don't know if he was the opinion that last year's ball was all that great after 2011 and 2012.
Right, a very pitcher's perspective.
Given this year, he thought it was a great balance. You know, when we've got that other extreme this year, we've had the other extreme that 2013 looked pretty good in the pitcher's eyes. And I thought it was a very balanced ball in terms of competition. And I think he hits the nail on the head that what we're trying to achieve and something I know Bobby Valentine used to get on NPB's case a little bit about this, you know, somebody who loves the game as much as we do about their inability to address competitive balance. And I think I was thinking about that as he talked about the Swallows injuries. I mean, there's not a lot you're going to be able to do about pitchers' injuries within, at least it's not an obvious fix. You know, how do you make pitchers less injury prone? I have no idea where the answers to those are. I can't even start.
I think but on nobody the other does, hand, yeah.
You can't address depth issues and you can't address player acquisition and so on if there is a point where competitive balance is actually a goal as opposed to something that should be sneered at, you know, if you're wearing black and orange or something like that.
Right. You know, make the draft more competitive balance based and yeah, there's things they could do.
They could do that. They could have player rentals, like they do in soccer. They could have, minor league free agents the way they do in the United States. They could have a Rule 5 draft like they do in the United States. There's a lot of things they could do, but they're not really keen on doing any of those things. At least the Omiri's not keen on doing any of those things. And that's really, for the most part, all that matters.
Yeah. All right, well, for me, when I sat down and I did want to ask him about his off-season workout regimen because, it's not like I studied kinesiology or anything, but he looked like he was more in balance and he looked like he was moving better, and that's what prompted that question from me.
Yeah, I got that feeling just standing there talking to him. He looks fitter than he has in a couple of years.
And that's what happens to guys, especially guys who are past the age of 30, but he's going to be 33 in October, and I think that just changes your perspective. And when he said that he had gone to do more, the core work is probably what I saw. I mean, let's face it, he's not the most fleet of foot guy out there, and I I'll get to it later, but I was talking to somebody about their defense, and this person in particular is not impressed with the defense all the way around, except for Toritani. He thought was a really good defensive player, but, you know, Fukudome is not looking good, and he hasn't been looking good since that collision with Nishioka, and
this is the time of the season when he normally looks good.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I could see that he's moving better, and I was, that's what prompted that question. And, you know, to find out that he's been doing some work with some trainers who train major league players, and that wasn't a big surprise. So it's no surprise that he got off to the really good start. I think that had a big part of it, and it's playing a role in his success early on. But there's a lot of guys who are having a lot of success with the ball the way it is as well. And I remember that home run in particular that he hit against the Swallows, that second one on that 7 RBI
day. The one to right field.
The one to right field, and we were talking about it. And you said wind, and I said, man, you know, it looked like a little bit different from wind to me. So I guess maybe it was a combination of both. But that looked
there were 9 home runs in that game.
Yeah,
so.
That was a pop-up that day.
Indeed.
But I think he also said, and it was one of the reasons that I picked the Tigers to finish out of the playoffs in our prediction show, is because it sounded to me like he was even coming into camp thinking there were limited expectations, or he was pulling the reins on the expectations because he wasn't sure what the guys were going to do. And he even said in the interview, some guys are basically, he said, playing over their heads, and he expects them to come back to earth a little bit or regress to the mean.
Oh, regress to the mean.
Regress to the mean.
Now you're speaking my language.
I mean, I don't know how far over their heads they're playing, so I can't say what their mean is going to be. But I think they perform. Now I'm just being mean. I think they perform. Yeah, they've been performing better than some of the people had hoped for, and maybe even some teammates had thought was going to be the case. I think they're overachieving a little bit. But again, I said that, you know, teams like the Dragons and the Swallows and possibly the Tigers are not the best teams in the Central League. So, and the team like the Bay Stars, who I thought might have been good, but I guess I overshot that in my prediction, saying that
they're regressing below the mean.
But
okay.
Yeah. So it's interesting. His perspective, I thought that was kind of interesting that he would say that.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because Tigers batting coach Tom O'Malley said something to me today that was quite interesting. He said, if you had asked anybody on this team how happy we would be to have the current record we have now, they would have jumped at it. I'm getting to think this was not just Matt Mertin. This was a team-wide thinking that it was going to be a tough year for them.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Tigers a little bit. And I talked to Tom O'Malley too. It's funny. We both go out there consecutive days, and I talked to him, and he was really impressed with what Hiroki Uemoto has been doing at.
Yep.
He's provided a great backup for the injured Tsuyoshi Nishioka. Okay. That's great. But if Nishioka comes back, or if he doesn't come back, is he going to be able to keep that up for a substantial amount of time, or for the entire season? Are you expecting him to do that? And what's your backup plan if he gets injured? It's the depth, you know, and Yamato Maeda is still hitting ropes. Mauro Gomez is making the Tigers look stupid for bringing up the fact that he was late to their ridiculously early camp.
Yeah, I had a long chat with him today, which rubbed one of the Tigers' PR guys the wrong way.
Look, you can rub a Tigers PR guy the wrong way just by stepping on the field.
Yeah, pretty much. No, they're really nice, and I like them. But, you know, they're being a PR guy for the Tigers is sort of like being a PR guy for San Quentin Prison. You're trying to, you know, you kind of got a really tough job.
You get your pay docked for smiling.
Yeah, pretty much. So I don't have any ill will against them, but they're really in a tough spot. Now, the interesting thing, speaking of Uemoto, because that he came up. Now, how much he can maintain, I think his offensive level is not that unusually high. But my concern, and I haven't really watched him play much, so I can't really speak for his defense, but I'm not blown over by his defense yet. I know he used to be a pinch runner type, and he scored an absurd number of runs for the number of games he's played in. But I don't know what his defense is, but on the other hand, you know, he seems serious and almost obsessed. I mean, that's a great word. He's one of these guys. I wanted to talk to him today, but he had the "don't bother me, I'm busy practicing" look. you know, he had his head down as soon as he walked past the reporters, and ran to the back to the locker room, got whatever he needed, and then hustled back on the field so he could be, I guess, out of range of reporters for as much of the pregame as possible.
Like you said last week, the appearance of preparation is also important. Yeah.
Well, I think it's
I think that's a Tigers thing, though. I think most of the players they try to do that, and the ones who stop doing that are the ones who don't get regular time to play. So.
Right. So anyway, I don't have a good impression of him. I'll wait and see. I do like Yamato Maeda. I love Shinsuke Watanabe. I've liked these guys for a number of years. I think that they're just showing basically what they can do. Ryota Arai, you know, I'm a big fan of his.
Yes, I do. I do know you're a big fan.
So I like a lot of the things they're doing. But, you know, it's weird because the Tigers are leading, I would guess they're leading Japan in runs scored by an absurd number. For a team playing in a fairly severe pitcher's park, that's pretty weird.
Yeah, probably because, again, they scored 11 runs and 15 runs on back-to-back days in a series against the Swallows.
Okay. Still, they've got an absurd number of runs, no matter how you slice it. And they're leading the league in walks by a large amount, which is normal. I mean, not normal for the Tigers, but it's normal that the team that leads the league in walks is scoring the most runs.
Right.
Same is true in the Pacific League. So, yeah, it is odd they're scoring that many runs, but I don't see a lot of drop-off in terms of, I think when the league settles down, they'll settle down, but I think everyone's going the same way. You know, I think Mauro Gomez, I think, you know, there's going to be some adjustments made to his approach that's going to force him to do something new, and how long it takes him to adjust to that, we'll wait and see on that. But Tom O'Malley said, you know, he's just a quick learner.
Yeah, he said that to me too.
So
and that being with Matt Merton really helps because you're with somebody who really knows the pitchers and who has been successful here too.
Did they finish batting practice by all talking behind the batting cage yesterday as well?
No.
The three of them had a little conference out there after BP was in, as BP was ending, whereas Gomez was finishing his BP. Merton came back to the batting cage, and the three of them were chatting for about 2 or 3 minutes and talking about something or other. Mm. And he said, yeah, it's pretty common that he has questions for both of them. Anyway, moving along, I guess the thing with them is, as he said, you know, how far the pitching is going to carry them. Last year, the Tigers were essentially a pitching and defense team. Mm-hmm. So far this year they've been more of an offensive team.
Right.
I don't think the defense is as good as it was last year. Mm-hmm. I don't, and I think that's affecting the pitching. However, you know, Fujinami isn't anything like, he hasn't done a thing this year.
Well, yeah. I heard some things about him too. But yeah, you know, former pitching great and Yokohama skipper and Shunichi pitching coach Hiroshi Gondo was there when I went there on Saturday.
Nice.
And he recognized me and he walked over and he struck up a conversation. Now, we really never spoken, but I think he recognized me from before he even went back as the Shunichi pitching coach. And I saw him. I've seen him at Koshien. I've seen him at Nagoya Dome. I've seen him at Tokyo Dome. So, and he and I were talking. He said he's not convinced about the Tigers' pitching depth and he's not very impressed. In fact, he wasn't very complimentary about the Hanshin defense either. Mm. And those are his concerns. And he said if they're not careful, that's what's going to catch up with them, or that's what's going to cost them when they're playing against the elite teams, especially when we go to Interleague and also when they're playing in the Central League, the top teams. So, yeah, he had that to say that about him. He, you know, the pitching depth was his worry. And I said, you know, they're getting good work from this rookie Iwasaki. That day, I think Iwata pitched. He did okay.
Yeah, first win in forever.
Nomi is Nomi. He's doing fine. Messenger is a stud. Fujinami is kind of, like you said, he hasn't done anything, but he hasn't done nothing. He just hasn't been what he was last year, and he's got to work a little bit harder, I think. You know, the times you have second year jinx is because you don't work as hard as you did the first year.
Well, that, and there's also the regression to the mean, which is normal, and very often guys who are very good, in other words, the results are not matching their actual quality.
Mm-hmm.
So it could, on the other hand, just be going the opposite way, in the sense that, you know, it's probably a case that he's better than he looks so far this year.
Okay, so
yeah, Tigers are interesting, and I've been, so you know, they've been a real pleasant surprise, and Gomez in particular has been a pleasant surprise, and as well as Uemoto. So, they're kind of fun to watch this year.
Yep. Gomez, today he reached base for the 27th consecutive game to open the season, and that extends that record that he set. So thank you again, Matt, and like I said, hopefully we'll be talking to you again at the end of the year.
Indeed, and so today when I walked up, he said, "Thanks for having me on the podcast." I go, "Wow." Yeah, the feeling is mutual. Thanks for taking your time.
Yes, definitely. Okay.
So I noticed the other day, and I guess you probably have noticed it too, some like names we really weren't expecting to be closing this year.
A couple.
Tomomi Takahashi. Who's
Takahashi.
That?
Yeah, I remember him throwing a couple games at the end of last year, saving some really important games for the Lions. Not saving, but I mean pitching in some really important games for the Lions and getting some crucial outs. I don't think he saved any, but he was pitching late last year.
Then there's the Fighters setup guy, or wait, it's hard to tell who's the setup guy in Nippon Hamland, because they have so many good, you know, pretty good middle relievers.
Well, and also Hisashi Takeda was injured, and yeah, we don't know when he's even coming back, right?
Well, actually, he rejoined the team today, which means he was practicing with them, and I don't believe he was activated. But Masui has been saving for them and doing it, and he looks pretty good. You know, he has five saves this year, or at least he had. They lost again today, so he still got five.
Yep. Oh, Shohei Ohtani lost his first pro game.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay.
He joins a fairly elite club. Well, it's true. That class of pitchers who are career 320 hitters with five career wins. Not too many of them.
Okay.
Okay. Now, so Masi has been closing, and he looks really good.
Yeah.
And then the other surprise for me, there's two others. I'll mention them quickly because neither of them are really big surprises, but they're interesting. One is Dennis Sarfate. And
I hear you pausing and waiting for me to jump in. So I'm going to jump in and say, yeah, I told you so. And
yeah,
I'm not talking
to
you particularly. I'm just talking to the SoftBank Hawks, because in the prediction show, I said, I don't think you can leave this team that has so much talent in the hands of Ryota Igarashi for the entire season. So I'm glad to see Dennis Sarfate saving games.
Well, I think that's the case, is that if Igarashi saves the games, then they leave him in there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's sort of like the starting with the plan B.
Yeah. That's sort of plan B before.
See if it works, it's a bonus. And if it doesn't work, okay, we got plan A.
Right.
Okay, well, Sarfate looks, he looks almost as good as he did in 2011 when he saved 35 games for the Hiroshima Carp.
When you said you weren't particularly impressed.
With Sarfate?
Yeah, remember? I was all over him. I was saying, this guy is great. I love this guy. And
well, that was in 2011. It wasn't that I wasn't particularly impressed with him. I thought there were other people who were more effective.
Well, what has he got? He's got 8 saves and 16 strikeouts and 13 games. How many?
So we're not talking about this year. We're talking about the comment from 2011.
Well, but I'm still.
You were running your whip past me like Devo or something.
Well, 16 strikeouts and 12.2 innings. I think he's doing really well this year.
Yeah, agreed. So, Anyway, so he's there, which is was kind of interesting. Of course, Dennis is a great guy, and he's always willing to talk, which, you know, that bumps him up a couple of notches in a sports writer's evaluation.
Exactly.
The next guy is I want to mention Scott Matheson, which is interesting because, you know, the Giants have, you know, Nishimura has been solid, and when Nishimura has been unavailable, they've tended to go with Yamaguchi.
Yeah.
But here is Scott Matheson. Now, interestingly enough, speaking of the Giants and their bullpen trio, you know, it looked like the Tower of Power, and some days now it's looking like a three-legged race.
Mm.
There's a little stumblage over there. And I'm thinking about what Dennis Sarfati told me in March, which was the Giants were one of the teams that wanted to sign him, although they had – in typical Yomiuri fashion, they had no real plan for how to use him.
Right.
They just wanted him.
Right. come sit on our pitch.
Exactly. join the Navy, see the world. Join the Giants, see Kawasaki.
Or you get to watch a lot of baseball.
Exactly. You indeed get to watch a lot of baseball. You get to learn all about the Eastern League. So, I guess Frederick Cepeda is going to soon learn about.
Yeah.
Escape the island to see Kawasaki, man. Okay. So that's kind of interesting. So Scott Matheson is currently, the closer. I guess because Nishimura.
I was
going to
say, is he? I mean, I think they're just going to co-close. I think it's going to be situational. Well, I remember before they didn't want to bring in Scott Matheson, and I was told because he doesn't have enough heart. One of your favorite phrases, right? Yeah, they said he just doesn't have the heart to close. He's got the stuff to do. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? This is such a Japanese thing. The guy's throwing 90 something miles an hour out there. You go hit it. he had some shaky outings, and they were just shaky because he was not controlled. You know, he was off control wise, but he's righted that ship, and he looks good. He had a really good two innings today.
Maybe it was palpitations. But you can only have those if you have a heart. So okay.
Ow.
All right. Anyway, the last guy isn't really a surprise unless you're surprised by. I don't know, unless you believe things managers say. And that's Yuji Nishino.
Yeah.
Now, Yuji Nishino is a 23-year-old who was supposed to be the closer for the Marines. So he only sort of belongs on this list, except you have to answer there's two mysteries about this guy.
Ta-da.
Okay, first of all, last year he went 9-6 as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, he was he wasn't a fifth year rookie, but he was about the end of the rookie limit. He was signed out of high school from Toyama, which is pretty rare, as a developmental player, an Ikusei player.
Right.
And all of a sudden his first chance to get, you know, to play, he's an effective member of the starting rotation. He was pretty good last year. Yeah, he had some slippage towards the end, but he was pretty effective. Maybe it was the slippage at the end that caused manager Tsutomu Ito to decide, this guy who's a good starting pitcher but seemed to run out of gas a little bit at the end of the season in his first year, maybe he's our closer. And let's take the guy who led the Pacific League in saves and is the former Pacific League Rookie of the Year and put him back as a setup man so he can take this guy we're not comfortable starting with and make him the closer.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so you've got that conundrum. I mean, that's a conundrum with a capital. Is it a C, I hope? And then you've got the other one. In March, they were telling me the plan was to make Nishino the closer after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
It's like they're consuming a lot of laughing gas, I think, in Makuhari some days. Well, or maybe it was me.
When you got something on the stove simmering, you can't rush it.
I guess.
I guess is right.
Maybe Mr. Ito had a discussion with his faith healer, the faith healer that he sent Alex Cabrera to back in 2007.
Where do you think these things
weird stuff going on. But the Marines, having said that, well, of course, they got their they catapulted into third place today because they got to play the Fighters, who they are 6-0 against.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so that was my I just wanted to mention these relievers because it was kind of bugging me, man.
All right. Well, I thought you wanted to talk about all of them. I looked at Cam Mikolajo. I think he's having his best season so far. I don't think the Dragons really can rely on Hitoki Iwase like they did before. I think they're going to have to give him more time off.
Well, the guy's got to have a walker for him now.
Yeah, and then Jorge Sosa for the DNA Bay Stars got deactivated. I think it was a...
Well, I mentioned these guys because these were guys, like I said, who there was some reason why they belonged on the odd man out list, and they had at least two saves. There were a bunch of people who had one save, but I didn't include them.
Right.
And, of course, the Bay Stars haven't had any save opportunities since they sent Sosa down, so they didn't really have anybody...
Yeah,
I guess they could make Kubo. Wait, he's a starter this year. Only the Tigers wanted to make him a closer.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think a lot of the games are going to be lost, not won or lost, but lost in late innings in the Central League. Let's just put it that way.
Hmm.
All right. So one of the topics I wanted to bring to the table this week was Kazuhiro Wada, and he is chasing the 2000 hit milestone this year, and if he gets it, I was thinking, you know, I looked up on the internet to see how many guys have a career 300 batting average, have hit 300 home runs, and he's at 1922 in terms of hits. So it's possible he could get to 2,000 hits this year.
Also, 1922, he's probably going to get it.
Yeah, I take that back because this is before Sunday's game, so he's going to be closer. So, and then he already has 1,000 RBI. So I thought, okay, who are the guys who have hit 300, have 300 homers and 1,000 RBIs and 2,000 hits? And I put the search in and I came up with a list of Hall of Famers, except for maybe two guys who are still playing, but they look like they're going to be in the Hall of Fame. And the list goes like this: Shigeo Nagashima, Sadaharu Oh, Isao Harimoto, Hiromitsu Ochiai, and those are the guys who are retired, and the current players are Michihiro Ogasawara, now of the Dragons, and Alex Ramirez, now of the Independent League.
So Guma, Diamond Pegasus.
Guma. Yeah, out in Guma. So,
got a home run.
So I'm looking at this list, and this is it. These are the six guys who currently, of course, Wada's got some work to do to keep his average at 300. I think he's really close. He's at 304 career, and this is before Sunday's game. So, but if he can do this and pull this off, do you think he is Hall of Fame worthy?
Yeah, that's quite amazing. I wanted to actually look up something about Wada because, well, first of all, he's another guy, favorite player of mine. And something kind of interesting about him is that, you know, he got a very late start in his career. He came out of a, let's see, how old is he now? He's born in June 1972, so he's...
Going to be 42, huh?
It's going to be 42 in June. Basically, he got his start, he became a regular in 2002 at the age of 30.
Yeah,
am I missing something here?
That's late. That is late.
He's going to be 42. Yeah, at the age of 30. And Haruki Hara, as I mentioned this on the show, basically said, look, we got to let this guy play every day. He was, for the first 5 years of his career, he was the third string Lions catcher and sixth outfielder.
Yeah, 17 games, 36 games, 20 games, 55 games, and 82 in 2001, and then he started playing more regularly.
Right, well, he would have been he was going to put him in the outfield, but he had bad knees at that point, so he was a DH for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he just went on. He won the best nine every year from the time they made him a regular. Until probably last year, he was a best. Until the year before last, he was a best nine every year, or a strong best nine candidate. He did win the Central League MVP in 2011.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm looking at him and I'm looking at these guys on the list and I'm looking at him and I'm looking at these guys on the list and I think, do these numbers say Hall of Fame to me? Yes, but do, when I think of the Hall of Fame, I think of players who were at least feared in terms of on their, by their peers, like feared batters or feared pitchers.
What is this fear factor? John Gibson's fear factor analysis again.
This is the guy you don't
get this stuff.
Yeah. This is the guy you don't want to beat you. So tonight we had a situation where Vladimir Valentin came up with the bases loaded and had a chance to win the game. And I think in that situation, if any base is open, you're not going to give him a pitch to hit. And that's the kind of guy I'm talking about. And I just don't see Kazuhiro Wada as that feared batter. And he's got great numbers and he's been playing for a long time.
Well, he's been that batter. He's been that batter on occasion. Yeah, I mean, he's had those times when you wouldn't want to try anything on him, but as on a consistent basis, well, no, because the thing is that he was also playing on a, you have to realize also that basically he's played on for 7 years in a row on either the best team in his league or the second best team in his league.
Yeah.
Pretty much from 2002 to 2012. So for about a 10-year stretch, he was on a team basically with a number of good MVP candidates.
He played with some real big stars and some real big boppers. So, yeah, I mean, it's easy to get lost in there.
It was, and I mean, the first year when he was a best nine candidate, you know, he won the best nine. It was Alex Cabrera hit 55 home runs. And the next year it was something else. And, you know, he was never that guy, but he was also, the thing is that he was never the big power hitter. He's basically an average guy. I mean, his RBI totals are not great. He was basically a number five hitter most of his career. He was basically an on-base percentage guy. You know, he was a guy who helped you by not making outs. He had a really, really good arm in left field. Never forget the Giants game in 2005. It was still with the Lions, maybe 2005 or 2006. The Giants were playing a series at Cebu Dome.
Mm-hmm.
And the Giants' third base coach essentially lost his job because he kept sending runners home on balls hit to left field with Wada playing left field, and he threw these guys out by 15 feet. He doesn't look like this athlete.
Right.
But he was a former catcher. He had a great arm. He plays the game well.
Yeah.
So anyway, does he seem like a Hall of Fame candidate? I'll have to say, looking at his numbers, no.
Yeah.
Most of these other guys have monster years in those careers. He's just like Mr. Consistency.
Yeah. Yeah. I called the manager, Motonobu Tanishige, a compiler because he's played for so long and that's how he got his 2,000 hits, but he's never been a great hitter. And I'd have to say the same is similar in this case with Wada. He's played, this is his 18th season. He hasn't had that long stretch, a 10-year stretch where he was the man.
Okay, I want to correct something. I'm just looking at the numbers. I was thinking Wada was the MVP in 2011 because when he was MVP in the Central League, Tsuyoshi Wada was MVP in the Pacific League, and I was thinking it was 2011 when they met in the Japan Series, but it was 2010.
Right.
The year Wada hit 37 home runs and
and
demolish the Central League. Okay. So anyway, moving along.
Yep. All right. Well, compiler, maybe not Hall of Famer. Okay. A couple of notes.
Yeah.
The Hiroshima Carp, Michael Westbay's pick through via an algorithm to win the Central League are two games ahead of the Tigers, is it?
Yep.
In the Central League, just updating, and they're killing it. They're looking good. We did talk about Shohei Ohtani suffering his first loss. The Orts Buffaloes have won all six meetings against the Rakuten Eagles so far. I don't know if that's a message.
Don't mess with the Buffaloes.
Don't mess with the Buffaloes. I don't know. And we didn't have a question this week, but we do have a comment, so let's get to that. All right. This is from Glenn in Tokyo, and he says, love the pod. It has become the highlight of my week. Man, I can't.
All right.
When I saw those words, I couldn't read further. I just stopped and just, I just soaked it in.
Luxuriated in those wonderful words. Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks a lot. All right. So he says, I agree with you both. And then he's talking about last week's show, and I agree with you both that none other than SoftBank has what it takes to run away with the PL. But I think you may both be a little guilty of overselling the Eagles here. Last week was full of Rakuten love. a little bit over the top of you consider.
Can I buy that at the Rakuten Ichiba?
I don't know. So I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's kind of long, but he points out, you know, Kevin Euclid, who we talked to on the show last week, has a lot of strikeouts, and Andre Jones is batting 184 and aging rapidly, and Tanaka, with him gone, with Makun gone, they lost 24 wins, and maybe they might get 8 or 10 of them back with the other guys they replace him with, and some other things. Their ERA is kind of high, and I agree. I think those are all great points, and I just don't remember selling. I mean, I don't think I sold the Rakuten Eagles. I said I had predicted them to finish maybe in third place, and that's where they were at the time.
I picked them second.
And I don't think we said that they were great, and the only thing I would disagree with you in is that they didn't lose 24 wins when they lost Makun. They lost 30 quality starts, and that doesn't always guarantee a victory.
This is a point I made last year, is that, you know, people would begin a sentence and say the Eagles, you know, won 24 games because of him. And I'd say he won 24 games because he was him and he was pitching for a good team that always scored when he pitched.
Yeah, I don't, he didn't go 24-0 by himself.
Indeed.
He had a lot of help. The quality starts give you a chance to win, and they scored runs. And I think we pointed out that they played a lot of times when they weren't facing their opponent's ace. And he wasn't going up against an ace, and that they were able to score runs, and that's what helped them get the wins. But I don't think it was all Makun. That being said, let's take away they won the Pacific League essentially by 8 games last year. And if you take away, you said 8-10, so I'm going to take the 10, and you subtract the 14 wins that you have to find in that hole there. They'd be at 68 wins if they can win half of the games that we're talking about here, that difference, that'd be a plus 7, and that would put them in the play. That would have put them in the playoffs last year at about 75 wins.
I think they're a good enough team to make the playoffs. They have question marks? Sure. So does everybody but the Hawks has question marks. Now, I think when last week, and John and I will disagree about this, but I think there was a case also of, you know, he had been talking with Kevin Euclid, and he was looking, you know, basically we're searching for things to say about the teams, you know, about the players we talk with, and we, you know, searching or thinking about different points, and he made some points, and, you know, and John's pointed out that Euclid has the injury issues, which haven't bothered me too much, but yeah, his lack of production at this stage, it's April. I'm not particularly concerned of. I mean, Casey McGee was a big loss. I still think Euclid will be a big part of that. Andre Jones is not having a real dissimilar season from what he had last year, because he's drawing a million walks and he's hitting home runs. And were we full of Eagles love? I think we were. When we get somebody on the show, we tend to be positive. You know, we tend not to say, well, you know, thanks a lot, but your team doesn't deserve to be on here.
Yeah,
even
good
if
luck with
do.
That, buddy. Yeah.
So I think, yeah, there's some of that vibe. I think we tend to talk about the team because, you know, the guy was on the show. And I think that we had some of that vibe going on. And sometimes it tends to be a positive vibe. Nuts and bolts wise, yeah, I thought I picked the Eagles second, but I also picked them to be the best of 5 teams that weren't named the SoftBank Hawks,
yeah.
and not a big difference between 5th, 2nd, and 6th.
Yeah, I don't think, given that the Eagles are struggling out of the gate, I think I said last year that they had a similar start. They weren't that great in April. And I think they started to come along in May, and we're going to reach May this next week. So Well, yeah, we'll see how they do. I'm still not selling them as a championship team. I never said they were going to win the Japan Series. Like I said, I had them in third. I don't know that they'll get out of the first round of the Climax series if they get into it. But we have to see. I mean, we can try to predict everything. But we found that everything is very unpredictable.
But thank you very much for the thoughtful comments.
And great comments and great points. He looked up the numbers and said, you know, Mukulis had struck out 20 times in 60 ABs. And although his BABIP was really good, his BABIP was close to 330 when he was getting balls in play. Mm. So I think, you know, a new player learning the strike zone in a new country
Speaking of our predictions and how the season's going, I hope you're not planning on taking a trip down to Kansai to blow up the Buffaloes or something because they're messing up your vibe there, John.
No, I you know, when I said it and we badmouthed them, I said, you know, I want to like the Buffaloes. We did because you badmouthed them, and I'll repeat this until
finish last.
But you said you don't even. We both said we didn't want to waste time talking about them. So
that is true.
So that's bad mouthing.
Because they've just disappointed me so many times in the past. That's true.
And this seems to be what they do is when you give up on them and you think, okay, there's no way in the world they can survive. That's when they start to thrive. So they really they have to be frustrating for
their
fans.
Manager.
But you know, I'm not saying anything yet because it's still April. I'm still evaluating. I think they played a really good series against the Eagles. I think they were behind at some point in one of the games and then they just ran them over. So I think
they were behind today by a run. But
early on and then they came back. Mm. So they're looking good. This Pacific League race is really going to be tight, I think. Good. It's going to be good and tight the whole season, and all the teams are pretty much really, really close. So it'll be injuries and defense, you know, that really separate guys. If one team has a swallows-like rash of injuries, I think they're going to be out. And if they can't catch the ball, they're going to be out. Other than that, I think it's going to be close.
Wait, another interesting, just before we close out, and speaking of the Pacific League, we have Ernesto Mejia.
Yes. Joining
who's
the Lions.
A really good player. I think a really good player. And the Cebu signed him, or are about, they're in the process of signing him from the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. Yeah. Should be exciting. They need some help. They need some help over there in Cebu, but they need a pitcher. They need somebody who can really pitch.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for the comment. And we look forward to questions and other comments. Send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page. And we love the MP3s.
Well, okay. I love them. John loves them, but I like them as well. And thank you again, Glenn. And thank you for all listening. And look forward to another show next week.
All right. Enjoy your baseball. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.